Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Live from Los Angeles, I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd. Radio only, which means we can do this show totally naked. That's the note he left me. You can do the show naked. I'm in a hoodie.
What are you wearing, Gottlieb?
I'm in a hoodie. Goulet, not in a hoodie. Tui, not in a hoodie. Anyway, we're here for you. Antonio Daniels, lead analyst for the New Orleans Pelicans, will join us half past the hour. Jeff Schwartz will join us at 10:30 on the West. It was at 1:30 on the East. And Nick Swisher will talk some baseball, believe it or not. We got a lot to get to. I want to start with this. We got a lot to get to. There is growing controversy over the poodle winning best in show last night. Poodle or golden retriever, right? Like, this is, the upper crust always works, always wins. Man, the poodle had a cool cut. I'm just going to tell you, poodle's barber, that you're the real MVP. You're Kevin Durant, you're the real MVP there. My sheepadoodle is boycotting the Westminster Kennel Club dog show. That's because there are no doodles. Doodles are not yet considered worthy of acceptance. All right, we got some dog talk to get to. I was listening early this morning. Clay Travis had a couple on from one of those cruise ships, which is quarantine. In the all-time non-injured living nightmares. Right? Like, anybody could say, like, what's your worst nightmare? I mean, like, there's lots of abduction and, okay, but things that actually don't do anything bad to you. Like, nothing actually harms you. Anyone's top five would be quarantined in a cabin aboard a cruise ship. What a cruise ship. Sixers get another home win, the best home team in basketball. The Clippers, The Clippers got their butts beat. We got a lot to get to. Let me start with this. So there's a correlation in these stories. Last Friday, I guest hosted for Colin, and it was fresh off the Rockets getting a win as they have downshifted to small ball, right? To completely go in small ball, and it screwed the Lakers up. Now, you fast forward to last night, and the Rockets beat the Celtics at home 116-105. There's lots of weird things with that game. This might be the strangest, and we don't have the crack research crew on radio only that we used to have on TV, but Goulet, you can look this up if you want. Has there ever been a game in the NBA where a team scores 116 points and they only get 5 points off the bench? I don't even know how you begin to look that up. But that seems to be a low output off the bench. 5 points. Austin Rivers hit a shot. Ben McLemore hit a shot. Nobody else made a shot for the entire bench. Russell Westbrook continued his tear. 36 points. He only took two 3-point shots. So maybe the real hero in the story is not Daryl Morey getting rid of Clint Capella and getting Robert Covington. The real hero in the story is whomever, Daryl Morey or member of the coaching staff, was able to convince Russell Westbrook to stop shooting 3-point shots. You're the real hero. The grand experiment in Houston is just the latest incarnation in what was started by Golden State. I correlate this story. The Rockets beating the Celtics, their second big win over a title hopeful team since going completely selling out and going 6'6", 6'7" in under league. And Zion Williamson having 31 points. Now, when Zion Williamson was coming out of college last year, and fast forward to this year, I have said and continue to say that Zion Williamson is not LeBron James. There's a little LeBron quality to him, but he plays actually the same position as a Draymond Green. Right? He's a power forward at 6'5 in change, 6'7 in shoes. He's a small ball center. And if you watched him last night, as the Pelicans, I mean, they absolutely positively destroyed the Portland Trailblazers. All of his points, and it's really easy to find them on social media, all of his points are against either Hassan Whiteside, who is the center, a couple are against Carmelo Anthony, who's the power forward, and then some Trevor Ariza when they got caught in a mismatch. He's too big and strong for Trevor Ariza, too fast and athletic for Whiteside and for Carmelo Anthony. This dude is a freak of nature. But, you know, I remember reading Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, and there's supposedly this moment when everything tips, everything changes. And maybe that was Golden State winning the title, or maybe it was winning 73 games the next year. But I always feel like change is not instantaneous. The change comes slowly and methodically, and it's helped out by other factors. That's what I got when I read the book. I always thought the tipping point was more of a, it's like a swell of a wave where you can see it off in the distance, and it's coming, 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 and it's here! And then it just washes everything in its path away. There's a lot to it. This changes my thoughts over what I guess the Warriors will be, how good the Warriors can be next year, maybe the ceiling for whatever the Rockets can be, but this is the next wave in basketball. It is here. It has arrived. You're like, well, you can't win a title that way. That's not true. The Golden State Warriors did. Now, did they play that way the entire game? No. They had Bogut, and then they had JaVale McGee. They would always start with the traditional kind of shot-blocking, rim-protecting center. Bogut, one of the great illegal screeners in the history of the NBA, also a very good passer. Right? And I miss his personality in the NBA. And like JaVale McGee's a rim protector and dunker. But if you want to say you can't win this way, I beg to differ. The Warriors did win this way. The question becomes, can you win solely playing this way? But the New Orleans Pelicans scored 138 points against the Portland Trailblazers. The Trailblazers have what we're told is an elite-level shot blocker in a Hassan Whiteside. And he could do nothing with a 19-year-old rookie, Zion Williamson. Part of it is the rules. They allow you to be super physical in the post. Part of it is post players aren't developed in terms of their skill in the low post. Part of it is analytics tells us that a post-up shot is, in fact, a bad shot. And that the volume of three-pointers taken and having sometimes four shooters on the floor or maybe five shooters on the floor opens up the lane and allows for greater movement. And so smaller bodies that are more agile, like Zion, can function better. But this is not the tipping point. This is not the crest of the wave. The wave has already crashed. I mean, if you watch the Bucks play, the truth is that's really how the Rockets are playing. It's a different body, okay? But, you know, Giannis is not a good three-point shooter. He hadn't hit five. I don't think he's hit four since he hit five against the Lakers. But Giannis, because there's no center in the lane, nobody posting up, and you put four shooters around him, now he can operate and do whatever he wants. That's essentially what the Rockets are doing. That's similar at times to what the Pelicans are doing. And what's amazing about it is we're so caught up in the fact that the Rockets haven't won to this point. I don't think they were going to win anyway. That many of us, myself included, in denial over what may be the ceiling. Like, look, they're just trying to be the best at what everyone else is, in fact, doing. That's what everybody's doing. LeBron did it. It may not have looked like it when he had, whether it's Chris Bosh playing center out at the three-point line or Kevin Love playing center. But the truth is, LeBron is, Giannis is doing what LeBron would do, which is go one-on-one, try and play downhill, and if you help, have three-point shooters all around the basket. That's what we do. That's what basketball's become. And people were in denial of Moneyball in baseball forever. Nick Saban was in denial about the spread and running tempo offense. And guess what Nick Saban has run over the past couple of years? You guessed it, tempo and spread offense. This is not the crest of the wave. This is the wave crashing down and taking everything in its path. The future is here. It is here. Right? You ever come up with a good idea for an app? You're like, man, there's a good idea for an app. Okay, don't tell anybody. Let's search and find out if there's an app like that. You're like, damn it! Somebody already invented that. Honestly, my wife one time, she was sitting there. She was like, you know what we need? We need an app. And I am doing the, that's not her voice, but I'm doing the, you know, it's a woman's voice. You know what we need? We need an app that's a mirror. Right, you press the app and it's a mirror, so you don't have to cover. You know, she doesn't even wear hardly any makeup. There's an app that's a mirror, and then I was like, well, that's a great idea, but man, maybe somebody thought of that. Oh, I haven't seen anybody with it. You search, you're like, damn it. We can sit here and think that the Rockets invented this thing, and then they go and search, like, yeah, kind of what the Bucks are doing, kind of what LeBron has done. Similar in some senses, some, not totally, to what, you know, the Pelicans are doing. Damn it! The future is now in NBA basketball. And it's, we'll talk about the Sixers a little bit later on in the show, but it's fascinating to see if the Sixers are able to evolve into being one of those teams with two guys that might not fit together in that form of basketball. That's really the challenge there. It's not that they're not great. Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid both had 26 points. But can they be both be great at an elite level on an NBA floor at the same time now?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Lots of things we can take away from The Godfather, right? Leave the gun, take the cannoli. Go to the mattresses. That's when you're going to war. You're going to the mattresses. I do believe there's a lot. There's a lot. But the Frank Pantangeli, this is Godfather 2 now. I remember Godfather 2. Godfather 2, one, it goes back to, it goes back, and then it goes forward. It skips through time. Goes to Sicily, where Michael is hiding out, right? Gets married. This is no spoiler alert, right? The Godfather is 30 years old, at least. But I thought this was interesting. You go back 2 days ago, or I guess 3 days ago, two days ago, and Michael Irvin, Colin has been big on this Tom Brady to the Dallas Cowboys thing, right? Tom Brady to the Dallas Cowboys. And I was like, yeah, I don't really see it. Well, if you listen, Michael Irvin was the one who also said that that Tom Brady to the Cowboys made sense. This is interesting. Hall of Fame wide receiver Michael Irvin created a stir by suggesting that Tom Brady could replace Dak Prescott. That was 3 days ago. Three. Now he's walking back those comments. He started the whole thing saying some very significant people led him to believe there was a chance the Patriots free agent could end up with his old team. Then he wanted to clarify. Right? I'm going to clarify what I said. I am blown away by this, Irvin told Clarence Hill of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. I said what somebody said that should no way be taken as my thoughts on what should happen. Mm-hmm. Ain't no way in the world that should happen. That would be insane. Are you kidding me? Are you out of your mind? It's over for Tom. Wait, what? Wait, 3 days ago, you're like, man, I'll tell you what, Tom Brady could replace Dak Prescott. Now you're like, no way. It's over for Tom. That's crazy. Who said that? Like, Michael, you said that. Nah, I was just repeating what I heard. But it actually came out of your mouth in first person. I don't know what you're talking about. This is like Frank Pantangeli before Congress.
Mr. Pantangeli, were you a member of the Corleone family? Did you serve under Capo regime, Peter Clemenza, under Vito Corleone, also known as the Godfather?
I never knew no Godfather.
Mr. Pantangeli, you are contradicting a sworn statement you previously made to me and signed.
Oh, I was in the olive oil business with his father, but that was a long time ago, that's all. Look, the FBI guys, they promised me a deal. So I made up a lot of stuff about Michael Corleone, because that's what they wanted. But it was all lies.
All lies.
Everything. And I kept saying,
Michael Corleone this,
and Michael Corleone that. So I said, yeah, sure.
Right. Here's Mike Irvin. I'm just telling you right now, the Super Bowl in Miami, some very significant people. I had conversations. We're leaning in that direction. It was shocking. I had a vodka cranberry in my hand. Oh, blame the booze. I had a vodka cranberry in my hand. When they said, I put the drink down and said, let's talk a little more about this. I promise you, I had a conversation with people. I can't tell you who. About the same scenario going down. And I was like, man, I don't know if it's a real possibility of happening. Now he's like, no, who said that? Who could possibly say that? I don't know if they brought in Michael Irvin's twin brother or brother from Sicily and sat him somewhere next to him. It's an old Sicilian family trick. Or if it was Jerry Jones doing the throat slash thing, like you're out of the family. I don't know. Hey. But man, that was impressive backpedal by the playmaker. Who said that? You did. I that's crazy.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, let's go to the Herd Global Satellite Positioning, whatever thing, a majig, as Jeff Schwartz joins us. He has his own podcast called Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. I believe his brother... starting his own podcast, I'm Better Than My Brother Ever Was. That's actually what it is. Brother, your brother, he basically threw out a 1600, right? Perfect score in the playoffs.
Yeah, one pressure and 143 pass snaps. It was pretty impressive. I think the highest graded lineman that PFF has ever graded in a postseason. He was locked in, man. It was pretty wonderful to watch. Obviously, Super Bowl, he played great.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome. It's a shame that you sold his tickets and didn't get a chance to see it in person. Jeff Schwartz joins us.
I wish I would have.
Jeff Schwartz joining us. Let's start a place that you live in, a place that you played, the Carolina Panthers. Okay, so Dave Tepper, let me play for you what Dave Tepper had to say yesterday when he was asked about Cam Newton.
Listen, I'm not a doctor. You know, and I said it a million times, is he healthy? And how does, I mean, he's not a doctor. So, you know, there's a lot of different things can happen. But first is he healthy? Tell me that and then we can talk.
Tell me that and then we can talk. Then we can talk. What do you take that to meaning?
Well, I said this from the beginning, that there is zero chance Cam Newton's back in Carolina this year. As soon as Ron Rivera was fired and it was clear they were going in a different direction, they have changed everything in the program. They have a new coach, obviously. They have a new strength coach. They have a new trainer, right? They have new, obviously, you know, Tepper's a fairly new owner for the Panthers. They've already, you know, jettisoned Greg Olsen. Luke Kuechly was a surprise retirement. They would have kept him. But you're going to see more cuts on this roster. Matt Rhule is going to bring in his own guys. They're going to bring in their own quarterback, whether that's via the draft, whether that's a rental or free agency. I just can't see Matt Rhule being forced to keep Cam. And look, if Cam is healthy, he's still a very good quarterback in the NFL. But how do you time Matt Rhule to Cam? And what if Cam gets hurt, you know, in the middle of the season? Now you've wasted Matt Rhule's first season and you don't have a quarterback for the future. It feels very much like this is the year that they move on from Cam. Cam will find a spot if he's healthy. But this makes total sense to me. I never thought Cam would be back this year healthy or not. And I think Tepper's comment, or really no comment, is kind of more evidence that that's going to happen.
Why not just say, you know, we're making a lot of changes here. We'll see. Why not, you know, I guess maybe what's the win in saying that hurts his trade value?
Yeah,
but why?
Yeah, you might as well just wait. I mean, there's no harm in waiting, but I think we'll see when free agency approaches. Obviously, if they release Cam before free agency, we'll know more. But maybe Matt Rhule looks around and he says, look, you know, I want to get this quarterback, but can we afford him? You know, Cam's still relatively cheap. I think at $20 million for his services if he's healthy. Maybe he truly is healthy now and they want to keep him. I think ideally they would rather move on.
Jeff Schwartz joining us. I saw this from Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin 3 days ago said, you know, I'm talking to people in Miami. And the Tom Brady to Dallas thing could happen. And then all of a sudden he does a complete 180 and says it'd be crazy to replace Dak Prescott with Tom Brady. Let's start with Tom Brady. Tell me where outside of New England it actually makes sense.
Well, I think it would make sense like a place like Nashville for the Titans. You have a good defense and have a really good coaching staff and have good players and a good general manager and have room to build around Tom Brady. I think that makes sense. Because you look, for me...
Do you think Tom Brady goes to Nashville, though?
Well, it feels like this for me, that like Peyton Manning when he decided to change teams or when he was forced to because the Colts cut him, he's going somewhere to win, right? At age 43, Tom Brady's not going to the Raiders just to play in Vegas and make money in a city that doesn't, a state doesn't have tax, right? Like, he has money. He's not going somewhere to break the bank. He's going somewhere to win. And so you have to look at the teams that have a chance to win. And so the Titans, I think, have in that division would have a chance to win. I don't think he's going to go there, but that to me is more realistic than the Cowboys, in my opinion, who have an offense with McCarthy that's not really built for Tom. If Josh McDaniels went to Dallas, I would 100% buy that Tom Brady was going there. I just can't see that happening because of the reason I just said. I just don't see him doing that, making that jump. You know, if you're looking for teams that win, the Colts are maybe possibly a team. I don't really see him going Indy, but
he's not going to Peyton Manning's team. He's not going to Peyton.
Yeah, that's fair too. But it's about winning. Like, so if he goes to Dallas,
yeah,
is he going to win? That defense is not good enough to win now. He's got about 2 years left, 2 or 3 years. That's why I think he stays in New England. But I don't think he's going to Dallas for a money grab.
No, I'm with you as far as winning and branding. I actually think the Vegas thing makes a ton of sense because lots of guys go to Vegas, you know, for one last kind of paycheck. I don't think they're all that, you know, they're crazy terribly far off, and they have shown the wherewithal to go out and get players. I don't know how he fits with Gruden's system. This is what I liken it to on my show. It's try to learn a foreign language in your 30s or 40s.
Right.
That's what he would be doing because he's played in one language. I don't think it's one pure system, but as you know, most people in sports know, like, all right, this defense, what do we call it? We call it Chicago. No, we call that Detroit. Okay, so Detroit is Chicago now? I'm so confused, right? You start calling things one thing, and now we got to completely change the verbiage for, you're not going to change for everybody else in the building. You're going to have to, the quarterback's going to have to change it, and we've done one thing one way for 20 years. Like, really? You're going to go, that doesn't seem to be a... something that works.
Also, at his age too, like this is something that along the same lines, like, you know, his trainer right now has full access to, you know, to the facility. And is that going to be the case? It will obviously be in Vegas, but does he want to go to a new facility, have a new routine, have new trainers? Like, all this stuff is new. Well, right now, to your point, he knows everybody. He knows the routine. The guys do stuff for him in the locker room, right? They have their routines down. I don't think he, at his age, he wants a new routine just to make more money.
Right. It's a great point. And, like, remember he skipped out on OTAs last year. You can do that on a team you've been with for 20 years. You can't go to a new team and go like, hey, I'm going to take a couple weeks off here. Like, yeah, kind of. We don't really know. That doesn't – No. We can't do that. Jeff Schwartz joining us. What about Philip Rivers? He says 2 years left. Do you think he has 2 years left?
I think he'll be in the broadcast booth before he plays football again. I just, if we're looking at the way quarterback, the position is going right now, I cannot see a team investing in a quarterback that can't move.
Can't move.
Whose arm is not exactly. You said Tampa?
No, I said can't move. I agree with you.
Oh, okay, yeah, can't move. And, you know, just can't, just his arm is deteriorating. He can still throw the ball, but we've seen over the years his arm strength get a little bit less. And I just can't see anything. You know, people mention the Colts. Why? Tampa Bay is not a good fit either because Bruce Arians likes big arm quarterbacks. That's not Rivers anymore. I can't imagine a team, unless they're super desperate, they have an injury or two. Maybe this is a signing in August when someone gets hurt, unfortunately, or maybe September, you bring in Rivers. I just can't see a team investing 2 or 3 years in a quarterback that can't move anymore. Look around the NFL. All the best quarterbacks have an ability to move and escape the pocket and make plays with their legs. And I just can't imagine a team signing up for 3 years of immobile Philip Rivers.
No, he was a bad athlete. He's never played another sport. Like, you know, most of these guys play hoop or baseball or whatever. He's never played another sport. He's not a good athlete. Then he tears his ACL. Now he's in his late 30s. Like, he's the worst athlete in the sport. And we've gotten to a place where you don't have to be Lamar Jackson, but you got to be able to move a little bit. He can't even operate in the screen game because he's so bad athletically.
Correct. No, it's all true. And your point's right. You don't have to be Lamar Jackson, but you got to be Pat Mahomes, Russell Wilson. I mean, have some movement. Even a guy like Big Ben moves decently well in the pocket for a guy his size. I mean, Tom Brady is not half bad in the pocket as well. And I just think that Rivers doesn't even move in the pocket well. I mean, he's just old. And so I think he'll be great if he gets an opportunity to broadcast somewhere. That to me is the better option. Just get in a broadcast. You've had a great career. Just be a Charger for life. I know you're in Florida now, and just get ready for your post career.
Okay, so let me ask you about Dak. What's the magic number?
So I don't know what it is, and I wrote this yesterday for SB Nation. It feels very much like we're getting into a Cousins Redskins standoff where you know, the Cowboys have a number. They offered him $33 million this offseason. He said no. Dak has a number. Dak has the amount of years. Both teams aren't moving off their spots. You know, both feel they have the leverage, and the franchise tag is going to be applied. And look, the franchise tag, while a lot of money, I think for quarterback, it's just not ideal for both parties, right? As a quarterback, you know, you'll get millions and millions of dollars of guaranteed money over multiple years. So you're set for life. And even though a franchise tag is $30 million, I mean, you're still set for life, but you're guaranteed, you know, $100 million, and you know you'll be for at least 5 more years. On the team side, you want to get a long-term contract done because they can set your cap up. You know what you need to get, you know, to surround your quarterback with, and you have a peace of mind for 5 to 7 years. And so the franchise tag, I think, for that position alone is something that no one really wants to use, and I think we're going there because Dak has dug in, and he's waiting for Mahomes' deal probably, which should have nothing to do with his deal. He's waiting for a possible new CBA that might be ratified in March. I doubt it, but you know that'll change the idea, you know, what his worth will be because we'll have more money, hopefully, on the player side, and they're at an impasse.
Here's the thing. Budget. How good is he, though? Right? Because the argument for Dak was like, well, you know, he might not be great, but they win. Okay, this year, the Redskins were an abject disaster. The Giants were an abject disaster. The Eagles literally had practice squad guys, and they still couldn't win the division.
Yeah.
Okay? That argument goes out the window when that's the result. And when he didn't have Amari, they had no offense. When they didn't have 2 years ago, and when they didn't have Zeke, they had no offense 3 years ago. Like, what are we doing here?
And when their left tackle's out, the offense doesn't finish in. It's a valid point, but I think you're stuck as an NFL team, right? Because if you're Dallas, right, you have obviously a talented offensive line, you have Zeke, you have, let's say you sign America to the back, you have young tight ends, you have talent on defense, you just didn't play well last year. You hope that the coaching change helps with that. So you're close, and then if you get rid of Dak, though, what do you do? Do you go in the draft? Do you try to sign Ryan Tannehill for cheaper? Like, what do you do if you're kind of, this is the problem with all these teams, like the Rams. And golf, you're kind of just stuck. Like, you have to hope, like the Niners did. You know, you pay Jimmy G, and you hope you get to a Super Bowl. The last 7 minutes of the game, he makes the 2 throws he needs to make, and you win the Super Bowl. Right? Like, that's the hope, I think, for Dak Prescott. If everything else kind of works around you, your schedule breaks for you, and you get to a Super Bowl, the last 5 minutes of the game, he makes the 2 throws he has to make. And Pat Mahomes did it. Jimmy G didn't do it. That's why the Niners didn't win the Super Bowl, among many reasons. And you have to pay in that hope. Otherwise, you're stuck. What do you do for Dallas? You're too low in the draft to get Justin Herbert. Jordan Love, in my opinion, is not the guy. Jake Fromm, Easton, those guys, you're not taking a first-round flyer on those guys. So what do you do if you're the Cowboys? You're kind of stuck.
Jeff Schwartz, this is the kind of stuff that you get in the Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You podcast. You're kind of stuck.
It is.
That's what you, that's what you get.
You're stuck.
Yes.
The Cowboys, what do you do? There's nothing to do.
I don't know if, I don't know if there's nothing to do. We do have the tendency to do what we've always done, right? Like the Brady thing doesn't seem to be a one that would work. Neither would get in Phillip Rivers, but you know, Teddy Bridgewater, Marcus Mariota.
Are those better than Dak Prescott though?
I don't know. But I will tell you something. They won't cost you $40 million.
Yeah, I would not pay Dak $40 million.
I wouldn't pay him $35 million.
I think those franchise them. They offered 33 already, so they obviously feel comfortable in some aspects.
Well, they also also a value to having cost certainty with a quarterback,
correct.
Right? His value is he's solid, he's consistent, he doesn't get hurt, he's cost certain. But it's like Draymond Green, like he can't do it on his own. He can't.
But there's only five quarterbacks in the NFL that can do it on their own, though. I mean, and I think that's the thing we have to realize about the NFL.
Right. So those guys should make $35 million. Everybody else should make in the $20 million.
Well, ideally, it doesn't work that way in the NFL.
Maybe it should. Great stuff. Thanks so much, Jeff.
All right, take care, bud.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Here's what happened last night in the NBA. Rockets, small ball, beat the Celtics. Whoever convinced Russell Westbrook to not shoot threes, I tip my hat to you. Like, you have solved one of the world's great mysteries. Why does he keep shooting shots he cannot make? But I saw this one. Ben Simmons had a triple-double, 26, 12, and 10. The 76ers beat the Clippers, 110-103. Joel Embiid had 26. Tobias Harris had 17 and 12. Josh Richardson was great in the fourth quarter. Had 17 of his 21 in the fourth quarter. Kawhi was awesome. The rest of the Clippers outside of Landry Shamet, not so much. I know it feels like you got to split up Embiid and Simmons. Doesn't it feel that way? Colin has asked about it. A lot of people have talked about it. I believe Joel Embiid, and we've talked about small ball, but one of the reasons that small ball works is because there are very few NBA centers who can score with their back to the basket, defend the rim, shoot in the perimeter, handle the basketball. Joel Embiid is one of those guys. He is a unicorn. Embiid is a unicorn. Right? He can do it all. He doesn't always do it all. He's not always in great shape. I am concerned, always concerned about a guy's health when his body is broken down so readily. And like, look, let's just be honest. This is one of the things with foreign players. We don't know what his body was like growing up, what his nutrition was like growing up, if his body's going to continue to break down. I think Embiid is the more transcendent player, but that's not because I don't think Simmons is awesome. I do, but Simmons got to shoot the ball at some point. I'd be cautious about breaking him up. And I use Kobe and Shaq as an easy parallel as to why. Right? I mean, they're a bucket away from beating the Raptors last year. A bucket. That hit the front rim twice and the back rim twice. Four bounces and backboard goes in. Otherwise, they would, you know, I think that game goes overtime, whatever, but it doesn't matter. Point is, they're that, it is close. Look, I don't think this was the job that Brett Brown was brought in to do. Brett Brown was brought in to be a stabilizing force when they went through epic and complete suckitude, right? When they were awful, he was like just solid. Del Harris wasn't the guy in L.A. They brought in Phil Jackson. They won three titles. Right? Doug Collins is a great basketball mind. Really good coach. Couldn't get past the Eastern Conference Finals. They brought in Phil Jackson. They win six titles. Now, I don't know who the modern-day Phil Jackson is. I don't know if it's Jeff Van Gundy. I don't know who that guy is. But I know that I'd be very, very cautious of jettisoning in one of these two players because you're not sure if you can get it to work together. Because in the regular season, guys aren't getting along. Shaq and Kobe had trouble getting along. They did. Shaq and Kobe did. But eventually, they found the right guy. I know eras have changed. And I do. I understand you could build an entire team of shooters around Ben Simmons or around Joel Embiid, and you might win more regular season games. But whoever has more great players tends to win in the playoffs, and that was almost the case last year. Just be very cautious.